Should the rally continue and metal continues to be added to the ETFs, would be relevant. And here we have, I'm pretty sure that 295 would be a record of all time. Well, hello there, my friends. Chris Marcus here with you for Arcadia Economics on another fascinating week in the financial markets with gold, silver, and copper and commodities all moving. And well, fortunately, they're giving out some clues these days of why some of these things are happening. I know a lot of the mainstream is like, wow, what's that gold thing rising for? Which, fortunately, Ian Harris of Copper Giant, who is also a well-versed silver student of the silver market and has laid out many of those things before and also shared some interesting things on behalf of what government is doing in the mining space, is here to join me and talk a lot more about it as we kick off the new week. So, Ian, great to have you back in here. How are you today?
Better. I'm happy to be here today, where things are coming to fruition, not just theory behind the, we're actually pulling back the velvet curtain today.
Yeah, and I know you're on the road today. Do you care to share where you are and perhaps any thoughts on the environment over east?
So, I'm currently in Munich. Tomorrow, I think I'm in three different cities. So it's obviously a very exciting time to be able to share the good news, everything that's happening. And really, it's everybody is trying to figure out where the planet is going, right? And obviously, there's what we read on the daily basis, but what is the game playing? Actually happening behind the scenes. This is it's always a topic. Lots of great conversations so far.
Yeah, well, as we will dig into intriguing piece of data from the latest Silver Institute mid-year report about the deficits and whether they actually might be even bigger than the headline would indicate. So before we get to that, and folks watching at home, I did give Ian a warning that I have a curveball for him. We're going to see if he can solve one of today's true economic mysteries, but which will help explain why we have a gold price of 41.30. Silver is still over $50. Copper has rallied over the past couple of months, which I'll look forward to getting your thoughts on, Ian. So we saw the metal spike, then some volatility, sell off, profit taking, whatever word you want to use, although somewhat stabilized. And Ian, here's another trick one for you. What do you think the price of gold was at the beginning of this year?
Oh, that is actually a really good question. Probably 3,100. That's what I'm going to guess.
Not even. And I think I didn't think of this to check until a couple of weeks ago, but it's stunning. It's $2,700 going into the year. So we're still up $1,400 over 50% on the year. Here we are back in August. That's August 3rd, 33, 3400. So quite a year it's been. Silver, we finally broke 50. Ian, this may be the first time we're talking in a post-$50 silver world. Any thoughts on the gold and silver pricing or this last leg of the rally or the consolidation, I guess, if you will, since then?
I think the acceleration in all commodities has caught a lot of people off guard, and those that haven't lived through these secular bull or secular bear markets, which have been the hard ones, it's like, oh my goodness, this is crazy. But it's obvious that maybe there's some more consolidation, but it's still the very beginning, right? I remember when I graduated from university in 1997, and gold had recently gone from $200 to $500, right? And people were like, oh no, this is it. And of course, it pushed all the way to $2,100 at that time period. So it's just the beginning. The only difference is bringing more eyeballs to the overall overall sector, right? It's those that understand, those that have been patient, those that have believed, especially in silver. I almost feel bad because it's been the same story for 10 years. And so I tell a new story, and they tell the same story in the silver space or copper space or gold space. And people are like, yeah, I've heard it for 10 years. I was like, but yeah, but now it's actually happening. And it's one of the advantages of being a mining engineer is that look at these things from the fundamental basis and now know that Sometimes you can be way too ahead of something, even if it's true. So it's actually playing out in front of us as we talk today.
Yeah, it certainly is. And we're going to come back to that because I had a question in the queue here about how, when the prices go up like this, what is the thought process for the miners? Where, one hand, you have for the producing companies right now, especially on the gold side, quite healthy margins, certainly silver, and I would imagine in copper as well. And where we have these last two metals, silver and copper, supply concerns, issues. And here we see, obviously, there was
Oh, it's a
the
great chart.
spike up and down around the tariffs last year, although still been rallying back and up over the $5 level. Although, before we get to that, Ian, I know something that's on everyone's mind these days because here we see US stocks surge on rate cut optimism. So last week we had everything selling off because one or two Fed governors came out and mumbled, well, we might not cut rates. And then now they're cutting rates and all of that panic, we're back down to or back up to 77.1% probability of a rate cut. It's quickly amazing how quickly things change. I don't know, maybe sometimes we should believe the Fed. Here they told you in their dot plot that 3.6 would indicate a rate cut this year. They also told you they're going to cut rates going out next year, let alone that Trump is bringing in someone who can cut rates even faster. So, any words of wisdom to people worried last week that the metals were selling off because we might not get a rate cut in December, which would have meant we would have gotten it at the next meeting most likely. But what do you say to people on that one?
I'm a fundamental guy, right? So you have to filter the noise and understand, especially when you read something or see how a commodity is going, what drivers, is it short-term drivers, medium-term drivers, or long-term drivers that have control over pricing, right? It's always a combination of all of those. And so when you hear rate cuts, is that price already in? Who is actually driving it? So we obviously saw, because we saw a super acceleration in prices, especially in gold, that people go, oh, it went too fast, hold back. But the overall thesis is there. And then, really, the most amazing part in all of commodities is that the cat normally it takes the catalyst to be in place before something takes off. Right? A dot-com bubble, everything corrects and then everybody piles into gold. It's after the correction that happens. But this case, it's even beforehand. So you have to ask what happens when something actually does happen. Normally, gold doesn't accelerate this until there's significant rate cuts are happening at the same time. And it is already, as you showed, went from 2,700 to over 4,000. It got to 4,400 before over, just the beginning of the rate cuts. So for me, that bodes well. But you have to think in terms of if you look overall, these long-term secular bulls and secular bears happen over 10 years, 12 years, 13, 14 years, right? So how do they play out? And it makes sense, right? Before the whole world actually understands what's going on, it's already taking off, then people pile in, and it takes a whole lot of time before this thing goes through. So you ask, for example, what do mining companies do when gold is at 4,400? Well, they try and produce as much gold as possible. But to add a new mine, right? If you were, say, today discovered a new mine, on average, it's taking over 10 years to be able to get into production. And those are long-term decision makings that actually see a bull through. So what normally happens is when you're at the peak of the bull, finally everyone can finally start producing and, of course, actually match the supply-demand deficit. But that takes 10 years to actually do. So there's a lot to play out. There's going to be a lot of short-term factors, but it hasn't changed and won't change the long-term drivers of what is pushing the equity markets, right? And another very strange thing, very new, and you could argue it's because of crypto and the movements into crypto that you've seen a run in the commodity space and you haven't seen the run yet in the equity space. So it still creates a lot of opportunity to people that are saying, oh, I missed out from gold from 2,700 to 4,000. Oh no, I missed out because gold, some stocks have gone up 100% or 250% on average. But again, it's just the beginning, and they're still way undervalued compared to the acceleration in the commodity prices. So there is still anybody who is going in today is still an early adopter that should win big in these overall super cycles.
Yeah, Ian, you really had a great point in there that I think people miss a lot. and you mentioned first in terms of the rate cuts, but also we haven't had the crisis yet, of which you can see something is building. They're spending and borrowing faster than ever, and I think we've learned, and it's good to keep in mind that, the print and extend. I mean, when you think about it, probably 5 or 10 years, they're still doing some print or extend form of that. Prices will probably be higher, but we still, this is, it's not like we had Lehman collapse and then the prices went up there. This is, they're still sending Powell out there to say, well, I think the economy's strong. It changes tune a little bit, still cutting rates, even though the economy's strong, yet labor participation coming down. So, and here we are, $50 silver, 41-ish hundred gold, and we haven't had any of these things resolved, let alone addressed. Although, again, Ian, like I said, I've been taking an informal poll here. Here was a couple of weeks ago. Here's Scotty Bessent, who still reminds me of Frank Drebin when he talks. Jobs are booming, inflation is falling. I'm not sure if either of those are accurate, but we'll stick to inflation. Here's their PCE. That doesn't look like it's been falling. Similar, there's core PCE, CPI, core P. You can pick whichever one you want. Even in their, I think even in their dot plot, they had in. Oh no, they have inflation gonna start falling. Just not yet. Another transitory period. Yet they're sending Bessent out with $2,000 checks for everyone. Ian, I did find a couple of dealers where, if you want to take your $2,000 check, they're actually selling junk silver below spot right now. But I guess in summation, between all of this and that Trump is still getting closer each day to nominating the next Fed chairman, is it safe to say that if you're a gold and silver investor, the Fed and the government, you can, at least from the gold and silver perspective, you can sleep at night knowing that sell-off or not. Like you said, we're still getting started even before the bondholders realize they're the ones who are going to be getting stiffed. And I think that's when the real money comes in.
So it's hard to decipher everything that's going on, but I'm going to give probably a new perspective, a new a little bit of sunshine for everybody to know where it's for the people that believe in the commodity space, in the metal commodity space. How is it possible that we are at a high on the exchange? We're high at gold, we're high, and at a time we're even high in Bitcoin. How is that possible? Everything is going up at the same time. And there's something that I've noticed since, because I've been in the mining industry since 1997, and lucky enough to see how great it was at the end of the last bull super cycle, and lived through a bear, long bear super cycle. That this one is definitely different than the previous. You say, how is that possible? And the only way that it's possible is it means that people have been sitting on cash. People have been, it's sort of like you got your finger on a button, but you're ready to pull it off at any second. The focus in market is much more short-term driven because we have so many algorithms. We're a momentum market. So much is on the table. And I think it's sort of like, yeah, I know that this is a bubble about to pop, but I still am making 30%. So I'm going to keep my butt, but I'm going to be ready to pull it off at any second. So when you see everything go up but gold come up, the only other reply that could be possible is people were sitting on cash and they no longer think that cash is good, right? So there's still money to be made in maybe at the time, crypto has obviously come off, Bitcoin's come off heavily, but that you see the market is still continuing to push higher and higher and higher and higher. Why was gold also going up? Because the only explanation is people were pulling out of cash and moving towards gold, which tells you there's nervousness over the overall debt that's being pumped in, and also the underlying fundamentals that there's an AI bubble. While there's still money to be made, I'm ready to pull my finger off at any second. Cryptos are going to be collapsing. I've got my right finger to ready to pull off, but I'm already hedging towards the gold space. People are already hedging their bets. And so that means that the optic has already changed. I've now been in multiple conferences, and the first time ever, you go, I've never met you before. What's your name? I'm, oh, my name is Kevin. And what do you do, Kevin? Well, I run a tech fund. I'm like, what are you doing at a mining conference? It's like, oh, because we realize that there's a rotation going on. And then rotation is a very important word because if you look at BHP. I'm just picking a stock, and you say, wait a second, these ratios are way out of whack. These guys are making so much money. Why is their valuation nowhere close? Why are they at a 2-to-1 ratio and when Nvidia is at a 100-to-1 ratio? This makes no sense. But that is where if you go, I don't know where to invest, those are the first things you look at, or where to rotate to. So the rotation is happening. There's a real rotation happening in market, and we're at just the beginning of it. And so that this neck break speed that gold went from 2,700 to 4,000 is nothing, right? It's just the beginning, and that rotation of capital is actually happening. And for me, the biggest indicator was people were pulling out of cash and moving it into commodities. They say, I do not trust the US dollar as a conservation of my value. I'm looking for places where I can gain value in my liquid portfolio.
Yeah, and it's funny you mentioned that because one of the groups that's pulling money out of cash and or creating cash to put it into the miners is the government now. And in fact, Ian, I think this was after our last call that silver finally officially added as a critical mineral. And I'll leave this open-ended. I know you've heard of the government, you've read about the government contacting companies, and if there's anything else along those lines you could add, I think would be interesting for people to hear.
Well, I'd like to be able to tell you a spy versus spy novel and cloaks and daggers behind the scenes, but I can tell you at least that I've never had to give an update on my project status ever to the US government, and I have recently. So they are at least paying attention, and they want to know what's going on. And so that is a massive change. But it's not unexpected, right? In a globalized system, you go, I don't care where it comes from, as long as I have the materials to be able to build what I want. So you have maybe at best, you're just combining components in the United States. But now they're going, uh-oh, we can't do that anymore. The number of critical metals has ballooned from like 35 to 60. That isn't because, oh, we're just getting ridiculous that everything is critical. Everything's critical now because they realize, oh, we can't make bullets. Oh, you know those armor-piercing shells that we are going to use to defend ourselves against Chinese tanks? We can't get that metal anymore because guess what? China produces it. So it becomes a
Oops.
strategic importance, right? And then they go, uh-oh, we just basically, over the years, nobody cared. It was all globalization. And the biggest one was, I remember people telling me it doesn't make any difference because China depends on us as much as we depend on them. But as they're shifting from a manufacturing to a service-based economy, they're like, we have our own economy. We can sell to our own economy. We don't need you as much anymore. And those balance of power is changing, right? Frank Giustra, obviously, know him very well now, and he shares a lot. He can actually see he can be a little bit more dramatic. I don't want to be as dramatic as him, but this is these shifts in power that are going on. And so it's kind of a eye-opening event that we're going through. And in these gigantic eye-opening events, there's a gigantic transition of wealth from one hands to the other. So we want to make sure that we are in the hands it goes to and not the ones that it comes from.
I know what you mean, and it's weird being in it for so long where you have your decade or two or however long someone sits there and watches the paint dry, and then the prices go up, yet in that thought process of okay, well, that's fine, the prices went up, now for anyone who bought lower is great, but where do you go from here? Yet I mean, because it's natural thing, all right, gold's at an all-time high, but when you really put all of these different pieces together and see that it's not just
It's just the
yesterday
beginning.
that Putin came out and said, hey, there's a problem with this system. I mean, now they're building the infrastructure. You see these things happening. And Ian, I know I promised in the beginning, but we'll get to it now. We did have some new silver numbers out, which we've talked, you and I and others have talked before about the deficits and the problem that's created. Now, what's interesting, the headline number, here's the deficit market balance. And it was negative 272, negative 210, negative 151. And then they're forecasting a 95 million ounce deficit for 2025. Yet, when you add in the ETFs,
ETFs.
see, they break this out separately. So, again, I think there's a relevant time to look at each number depending on what you're trying to figure out. But basically, if the ETFs don't buy any more metal, then it's good to go. But should the rally continue and metal continues to be added to the ETFs, would be relevant. And here we have, I'm pretty sure that 295 would be a record of all time. At the same time, we obviously had the silver
There's
squeeze.
one other number that's very important. to put it in perspective,
Yep.
and that is 800 million. 800 million is how much actually how much is actually mined on a yearly basis, right? And so one of the neat things about silver, so you look at gold. Gold is a storage of value. It's 100% dependent upon these kind of things. It's based on World Bank or investment buying and some jewelry, which is also has a share of hoarding wealth. But as prices shift, people either selling that value or accumulating that value. Where silver is the one that's in between, it's both an industrial buying, but it also is in jewelry and conserves wealth. So when prices go high, how is it possible that we have a cumulative 1 billion deficit, right? Which is a world production of silver. It's because people can sell their inventory as the price is going up, right? Either they sell their jewelry, sell their grandma's candlesticks, but there's somewhat of a buffer in between. But the switch occurs when people go from selling their inventories to going, I'm not selling anymore. I want to accumulate inventory. And we're seeing that switch go off. To me, the most important number is 800 million. But the other one is that the ETFs have switched from a seller to a buyer, which is indicative of investment, the investment component of whether it's coming to market or not. Now, as you know me, I'm a copper guy, right? So a copper guy also says the major difference in copper is there we're not sitting on inventories. Right, nobody is melting their grandma's candlesticks of copper. They might be chopping wires and blowing their arms off trying to steal Tesla wire, but it's nowhere in comparison in the overall demand of copper. So when you hit a supply demand deficit in copper, it's instantaneous. It's instantaneous how fast that occurs because the industrial hunger is nonstop. And the big one is that we're flipping right now with Grasberg out, Africa out, and Cobre Panama out, what Congo, sorry, and Cobre Panama out. We're now flipping quicker than anticipated. One small disruption, and we're flipping into a supply demand deficit. While the short term guys say, well, the US, the tariffs, et cetera, it's pulling back and forth, but the price is continuing to climb. But it's getting closer to that. We're going to hit that smash into the wall moment, right? And probably for US investors, one of the biggest disadvantages we have is if you can pull back that chart back up of the COMEX pricing of copper price, is that because we all look at our Apple phone to see what the prices are based on the United States, we go, yeah, copper's getting up over $5, but it's not close to where it was back in, I think, May of last year or this year, sorry. But that is an artificial bubble. If you pull up the same price on the LME, why is that gigantic spike and drop? It's because there was an in anticipated tariff coming up. So people were hoarding copper in expectation there would be an arbitrage between the COMEX and the LME price, right? So we're getting, if now, look, you don't see that gigantic blip on the LME chart, right? So it was artificial. So we don't recognize how much copper price has actually gone up because there was an anticipation that there would be a 50% tariff on refined copper. And then at the very end, they go, no, it's not on refined copper, that we're going to do that in 2 years. Right now, it's only on secondary products, which makes sense because the United States doesn't, it takes too long to incentivize. So what they want to incentivize over the next 2 years, they're basically sent a very clear message. You need to build smelting and refining capacity in the United States because we are going to be building a copper-based production chain in the United States. You get 2 years. And so that pushed into seeing 550, and I think it got up to $570 per pound, but it was artificial. So we don't feel it today that it's at $5, that this other dynamic is going on where there's a supply-demand deficit in copper. We've heard it. We saw it on the front cover of The Economist saying copper is the new oil, but we haven't felt it yet. But it's happening right in front of our faces. So those that feel, okay, I don't think you've missed out on gold and silver, but if you feel out, don't worry. It's coming in copper. Those 250% gains that happen overnight and feel like they happen super, super fast are coming in the copper equity space. It is about to happen. It's playing out right in front of our eyes, and it's not hidden. It's really happening in front of us.
And Ian, is copper also subject to that 232 report?
It is, but it plays out very important. So A is a critical metal. It played out. But what they did was, and it's really important, right? If you understand, copper mines don't produce copper. They produce a copper concentrate. A copper concentrate goes to a smelter. The smelter produces an anode. An anode goes to a refiner, produces cathode. And that's called refined copper. And they basically said, you have 2 years before the tariff enacts. It's now a critical metal. Which for companies that are producing copper in the United States, it's great. Why? Because literally China has overcapacity in smelting and refining capacity. You don't have enough mine production, but you have an overabundance because they're saying, I don't care. I'll pay you. I'll pay you for your copper concentrates because the supply chain is more important. And that's hard to compete with in a capitalist environment that doesn't have subsidies. But now it's basically saying you now get them. You basically, this counts as a strategic metal, some of these subsidiaries that have been put in place to incentivize manufacturing in the United States. But by saying that you have a smelting and refining reprieve for 2 years means build smelting and refining. It might take you 10 years to build a mine, but it doesn't take you 10 years to build a smelting and refinery in the United States. But it also means you're going to build, Chris, you're going to build a refinery, you're going to build a smelter in the United States. You need to supply that smelter, right? And in order to be competitive, it has to have these incentives because you're competing with China that literally at times, normally you pay for the service of smelting your material. They're literally saying, I'll pay you to have the luxury of smelting your material. And sometimes it's zero. It's called a treatment charge. Refining charge is now zero, which tells you that they're desperate for these materials. So to be able to compete with that, United States is saying, you've got 2 years, you build your smelter and refinery, but it also, for me, who wins in all of that? The guys who actually have the mines, because it means there's going to be a competition over an excessive supply of refining capacity, right? Despite that there's not enough material to go into. So as you're having a breakup of globalization, at the same time, you have an overall fundamental supply and demand hole, right? So it's playing out very interesting. It's why my project in Colombia, I'm very excited because it's a major non-NATO ally of the United States. And if you understand the concept of friendshoring, these are the kind of countries where the United States goes, you produce the material, we'll refine it here, we'll build the Teslas here.
Yeah, and Ian Bloomberg here, speaking to what you just mentioned, worried about China's grip as we head to make or break supply talks. Sounds exciting the way they phrase it. Although, here you go. Negotiations coming to head at a time when geopolitical tensions are running high. I think people knew that. Metal is limited, and China's dominance has left smelters elsewhere struggling to survive. So, very much in line with what you're saying. And there's the title if anyone wants to look that up. And Ian, I suppose that leads in perfectly because, as you mentioned, you're one of the entrepreneurs out there attempting to capture this and not just saying there's a problem, but you're actually out there doing something about it. And got some great news today with a new inferred mineral resource at 1.12 billion tons of copper that seems like the market is liking so far. You're up 30, well, if we round up, we could call it 31%. Someone wants to be precise, 30.62%. But obviously, in the context of everything else we've just talked about, certainly good news. And I'd love if you could fill people in on what you came back with here.
I don't mind filling in when people understand that copper mines don't produce copper. They could produce a copper concentrate. Refined metal is produced in a smelter. So when you see these news and you get those mixed, I don't understand what's going on. You have to play all those things together. Refined copper is the price that's put that comes out the end of a refinery. So that last article is exactly what I'm talking about. There's excessive capacity to actually process copper concentrates. So as you go, United States, I want more copper. I want to produce electric motors that go into Teslas or to data centers. I now have to compete in a market that's already got oversupply. But the feed to that supply, the mines are in undersupply. They're in demand. So all this is playing out. So something we've been on that I hope I'm your favorite copper story, right? And for a reason, as we this
Of
enters the
course.
data banks of trying to say, I am trying to predict what the world is going to want when it finally wakes up and realizes it needs it, right? I mean, that's a big part of it. So Why is this news being so well received? Is because we have passed a billion tons, right? We went from a 600 million tons to a billion tons. Why is that important? Because there's only about five or six or seven big, gigantic copper companies. There's maybe 200 gold producing companies, but it's very concentrated in the copper space. Very similar market size. You know, if you look at the total copper produced per year, total gold produced, it's today, even at $4,000 per ounce, is a very total. The commodity market size is very similar, but it's much more concentrated into a fewer hands. So if you are a Rio Tinto, you don't want to build 50 mines. You want to build a mine or two mines, right? To do your part of what needs to be built. And for us, the billion ton mark is huge. The other underlying news that is here, right, is the grade. At a 0.51, this puts us as one of the highest grades. So I know of only five other near surface billion plus projects on the planet. Why do I say near surface? It's because if they're deep underground, it takes a long time to develop and it obviously costs a whole lot more money. Right. The second piece of that is you look at the line right above that one, it's 190 million tons at a 0.94. Why is that? Means that 20% of that 1.1 billion is extremely high grade and near to the surface. Those are grades that approach underground, you know, even the total resource is close to what we see in some of the best underground deposits in the world. So when the world wake up and goes, oh, more. Oh, no. We need copper. What are we going to do? They're going to look for what's the easiest to build, what's the quickest to build, what's the cheapest to build, and what can I build that would be economic return so I don't get fired as a CEO for picking a bad project. So this puts us in a brand new category. I called it earlier today, now that I'm in Europe, the cool kid club, right? Because we're still, the market hasn't woken up yet to the equity space. There's a reason why gold company, or sorry, mining companies have the best ratios in market today because market isn't looking, right? Yeah, BHP is a 2-to-1 and NVIDIA is 200-to-1 ratios where they haven't that th there haven't been the rotation yet, right? But when that rotation happens, people are going to want go to the first. And that's why market's responding. It puts us into a brand new category, a very elite category of near surface billion plus tons at amazing grades, right? I would argue that this is probably the highest grade project in the world, over a billion tons. And near surface in the world. I would even argue too that not at high elevation, not in the high Andes Mountains, right? It's about 1,500 meters elevation. So it puts us in a very unique category and finally puts us on the radar of so many companies and investors.
Yes, and Ian, you've completed 9,500 meters since 2022. Although, as you fortunately mentioned here, you still have two drill rigs going and another 4,500 meters planned. Anything you could talk about, especially in
Sure.
terms of things that you've learned since 2022 and also the timeline going forward and things people should be watching out for?
First, we're up. You mentioned as of recording today, I think we're up 35%. You were looking at the OTC, but on the TSX, we're up 35%. The first thing I want to mention is that this project valuation, because you're really going from one tier of valuation to the other. You could argue that we're trading for about 0.2 cents per pound in the ground, and our nearest competitors trading at least a penny per pound in the ground. So there's, if it's up 30, don't worry. I think that it could go up 5x, right? I think it's one that could go up 10x. It's one of these, we're in a momentum market and we're finally shifting to what I call a graduation process to get a proper valuation. So it's one of the reasons why I wanted to do these interviews so early, as people know that this is still the beginning, hopefully, of a true revaluation of the market. I know that Frank Giustra, who is the biggest shareholder of the project, is out there supporting it in the background. Hopefully that comes out soon. But it is truly all the catalysts have been hit to justify a total new valuation for the company. The other, it came out early, right? We are doing 14,000 meters this year, and we've only completed the 9,500. It's because in the initial, we were going to do some internal calculations. The numbers came out so good, we said we got to get this out to market. So that 14,000 number is more or less where we think we're going to come out, and we should hit guidance by the end of the year. But we will continue to drill. Probably next year, as a minimum, we'll do about 24,000. But my number one goal, we mentioned it earlier that elections are coming up in May in Colombia. And that, why is that important, right? Because we believe some of the overhang has been on because of Colombia. But for the last 30 years, we've all had center right, strong allies to the United States, and we've kind of been in the first leftist government, and it's coming to an end. You can only run for one presidential 4-year term in Colombia, so we're going to be looking at a new president. And that also is why we put out the new resource, because we know that their next stage is to put out the preliminary economic assessment, and we want that to be tied to try and get out at the same time. So mayor elections, new president in August. And we want a PEA out at that time so that when I get that knock and it goes Ian Harris, the president is looking for projects that bring in lots of investment into to Colombia. What do you got? Right. I want to say, look, this is the project, billions of dollars of investment, tens of thousands of jobs, move your GDP 2%, become a true mecca for copper production in your country, et cetera, et cetera. Oh, and the other things behind the scenes for those that have followed the company is that we're aligned with the community. They're a part of the project. They support the project. That the that we have we hold a strong national reputation where people go, I actually like those guys. And then that we're checking all the boxes that drive a political will. So these are big projects. And my experience is based on Ecuador, but Ernie Mas in Panama. But to see that there's windows of opportunity that are created, and these are big projects to be able to get them through the window and time that very well. So we always have that vision multiple years in the future. And that's why we want to time the PEA coming out in August. I've said it for many, many times. I treat this like the billion-dollar asset that it is. And the decision making is always looking way into the future. So obviously, it's an exciting that we feel we're at the beginning process of actually getting our valuation. We were $30 million Canadian yesterday. We're at $40 million today, but I still believe it's nowhere close to the value that the project actually deserves today, and will continue to grow as we advance it into the future.
Well, congratulations. It's fantastic news, obviously, in the context of where we are in the world. And perhaps just for people who have questions, want to go into the details of the drill results a little bit more, could you let folks know the best way to contact you?
Absolutely. So I'm trying because I'm going to Europe, just repeating myself over and over and over again about trying to get the message out about this project, what it means, et cetera. I think we're going to try and do a webcast, so I hope. But I know this sounds strange, but honestly, I'm a WhatsApp guy. I get 1,000 emails a day, so sometimes it gets lost. So you can see my email at the end of every single one of our press releases, but just send me a WhatsApp. +1 303, there's my number right there, 303-956-2944. Send me a message. I love to talk to shareholders. I love to share the passion that I feel for this project. So I'm more than happy to reply to a WhatsApp when I can. I might not be able to get to immediately, but I feel free to send me a message. I love talking and sharing about the project.
Well, I sure appreciate that, Ian. And again, congratulations on the news. It's nice to see when things come together. You get some nice timing in the market as well. And in either case, you'll have to keep us posted. And good luck with the travels. And we'll catch up with you again soon.
Well, thank you. That being the one, I know you're a silver guy, but to be the one copper project that you knew was special, and I've enjoyed our conversations to be able to kind of prove you right, that this is definitely a special project and a special company, and we treat it like the billion-dollar asset that it is.
Well, I appreciate that, Ian, and we will talk to you soon, my friend.